The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
That's right. I need this to wake me up. Oh yeah, feel those drums. We are back with part two of our UFC 269 post-fight coverage. The final pay-per-view event of 2021 is in the books. Charles Oliveira, still the UFC lightweight champion, and Juliana Pena, a brand new UFC women's bantamweight champion. We're here to recap all the action with all of you. We got the whole crew here. I am Mike Heck. We got AK Lee. We got Jed Meshew. We got Casey Lydon. And...
that's the wrong camera. You know, we also got.
We're sponsored by GoPro, apparently.
GoPro?
So, look at this. Oh. On location. Can we hear you? Can we hear you?
Gaffer man.
I can't hear him.
What? We can't hear you.
Oh, what's going on? Oh, there he is.
Oh, he's coming in. Sean Alshadi is here as well. Hello, Sean.
Sean?
What's going on, fellas? I can barely hear you, but you can still
play. You know, it's funny you say that because we can barely hear you. We're like five peas in a pod right now. So thank you for joining us. But first, let me just shout out the theme of this post-fight show. We're going to call this UFC 269 post-fight show .. victory laps, because apparently everybody wants to take a victory lap right now. AK, I know you want to take your own victory lap. We will get to you in a moment, but we got to go with what's trending. And Jed Meshew, you are trending bigger than Daniel Bryan was during his run in the WWE when the Yes Movement was taking over the universe. You are the Daniel Bryan, Jed Meshew, of MMA media. You went out on a limb, the biggest limb in the history of limbs. You said it into a live microphone, not once, not twice, but three times, that Juliana Pena would leave the T-Mobile Arena tonight as the Bantamweight champion. And sure enough, she has the Bantamweight title with her right now. Lap away, my friend. Lap away.
Man, y'all are never going to hear the end of this one. This is... I was doing the live blog for the site, and I apologize to anyone who did not buy the pay-per-view and was just trying to read that, because that's probably the worst live blog I've ever written. Because when Pena started dinging her up in the second round, I was trying to type, but I kind of just like, oh my God, this is about to happen. I'm going to be the smartest man alive. And then it just kept going. And at any point in time, I was expecting one of the haymakers Nunes was throwing back to like end all of my hopes and dreams in the saddest way. Because look, Pena won, dope, but let's not forget, like, she did kind of get tooled up in that first round. Every time Nunes touched her, she was dropping her, and so when she just dug down into this brawling thing, I was like, this is incredible, she's gonna do it. But then, oh my goodness, what if she just gets clipped here? Because Nunes was still just trying to find her. That whole sequence was awesome. I was yelling just at my TV while it was going on. I've never been a big Juliana Pena fan, but that was easily like one of the most fun fight experiences of my life watching that happen in real time. So sick.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing moment. I'm glad you got to say that. Sean, I'm glad you're here. You're in the building right now. You're in the building. You were there as Juliana Pena became the bantamweight champion of the world. She did something that nobody expected her to do. She's Amanda Nunes is a minus 1,000 favorite, except for Jed Meshew. Jed Meshew and right. Michael Chiesa were the only, and Juliana Pena were the only three people on this earth who felt Juliana Pena would win this fight. What did you think, man? You're there taking it all in. What was that like for you to be a part of?
Man, utter shock. Utter and complete shock, if I'm being honest with you. I mean, nobody in this building could believe it. Nobody in the arena could believe it. None of the media could believe it. And the way it happened, too, it wasn't just some fluke thing, right? It wasn't just some flash knockout. It wasn't just some random submission that she caught. There was sort of a process through it. That second round, you could see this sort of developing. And it was just mystifying, man. It's honestly one of the most incredible things I've ever had the privilege to see in this sport. I mean, we try not to be too reactionary on these sort of post-fight things, right? These sort of vehicles for these post-fight thoughts, but it's hard for me not to say that that's the biggest upset in UFC history. We've been talking about Amanda Nunes as the GOAT, as the female GOAT, as the greatest female fighter of all time for so long at this point. She has held that belt for 6 years. She took it from Misha Tate, of all people. And Misha Tate's gone through a retirement and a comeback in that time. And Amanda Nunes was the one constant. She's been the one constant in the UFC for so long. And for Juliana Pena, who at one point, you know, she blew out every ligament in her knee 7 years ago. She had the long layoff 4 years ago, 5 years ago. A couple of years ago, she was a loser of 2 of 3, and it was just, it never felt like it was going to happen. And now all of a sudden, she's the one that beat Amanda Nunes. But not even that, she broke Amanda Nunes. She made her tired. She forced her to quit. It's unbelievable. It's hard for me to say that this is not the greatest upset in UFC history.
It's definitely up there. I think a lot of people can make, obviously, the three big ones that come up are tonight, obviously, GSP and Sarah, and then Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold. All three excellent choices. You can make arguments for all three, but, man, this was a tough one to make an argument for. Jed Meshew, you did it so eloquently. Jed, I'm going to go back to you. You nailed it. Exactly the way the way you said it was going to go.
You said she was taking a beating the first round, and then what?
I said that if she was going to win, she had to one, and I wrote it to this today, she had to ugly the F up out of this fight, which is absolutely what she did in the second round. And then I was like, yeah, you know, things are weird, and Amanda Nunes is maybe a little complacent here, and this is just one of those things where she has a bad night and Pena comes in dialed in and makes it a really dirty, ugly fight. And that's even what Nunes said in her post-fight. She was like, I just didn't have it today. Because that's, I've said it a million times, the most difficult thing to do in all of sports is defend a title time in and time out. And especially when you're a minus 1,000 favorite. Like, even if you are the most psycho competitor, it's still, it's hard. That has to be difficult every day to wake up when the expectation is you're going to clobber this woman. And even in that second round, like as far as I could tell from watching it, it looked to me like Nunes, for better or worse, just got into I handled her in the first round, was never in danger, everything was fine. I'm just going to hit her and she's going to fall over. And she kept just hitting her and Pena didn't fall over. And then, oh crap, I'm gassed out and I'm getting jawed. Like, it's just really difficult to defend your belt time in and time out. And I never would have said that Juliana Pena was going to tap Amanda Nunes in the third round. Like, I don't think anyone alive would have thought she'd have got it done that quickly. But she did everything else. She made it really ugly and just turned it into a dogfight. And Nunes got overconfident and didn't have her A game today, and it cost her. I nailed it as far as I'm concerned.
I think you did.
Jed, it was the second round.
It was the second round too.
That's like Nunes fell apart so quickly. But what I think it's interesting is, like, this is very consistent with how Nunes loses. We just kind of forgot how she loses. If you go back and fight past, watch her fight when she lost to Invicta. Watch how she lost to Catanzaro. Watch how she lost to Alexis Davis. It was the same way. Started out strong, faded fast. And I thought Amanda Nunes was gone.
Oh, you're alive.
Oh my God.
Marcus. Oh.
We got everybody.
Oh, media source sorry, of the everyone. Year. Media source sorry, of viewers. The year.
Can we blur that out? Can we blur that? We do some
Mark, be honest.
I'm kidding.
Mark, we love media source of the we year love. Have predicted Juliana Pena's epic upset. Because I know which one I'd rather have. I got four media sources of the year. Only one person in the world has the Pena pick. And is this guy.
I was, you know what I was thinking as that fight was happening, Jed? Remember that Between the Links episode that just you and I did, and we were talking about how mm-hmm. to make the PFL better, the power bar and the energy bar? Like that yep. fight in particular would be the perfect litmus test for how that energy bar would work. Because mm-hmm. like it would have been perfect fight for it. Perfect fight for it.
Oh man, I need to get with somebody to develop that. It's a really good idea. But let's let AK have a victory lap too, because
yes.
So oh, yeah. I'm the great genius of unexpected things. I was wrong about the main event, and one man at least here was certainly not.
Yes. So teasing said victory lap, we have the Prince of Positivity, Mr. Alexander K. Lee, who wanted to come on and take his own victory lap. Charles yeah. Oliveira goes in there and defends his title against Dustin Poirier. He submits him in the third round, gets it done, answered all the questions, faced some adversity. Does he have the heart? Does he quit? Can he get over the hump? He did all of those things. And then he actually broke Dustin Poirier. He actually broke Dustin Poirier and put him away in the third round. So on your mark, get set, go, AK. Lap away.
Yeah, this one was definitely touch and go, though. I mean, I think for a lot of Poirier supporters, it was going exactly as they thought it would. Like, he was really messing Oliveira up. This is just definitely a testament to Oliveira's toughness, not necessarily his defense, because he just ate a lot of clean punches and fought through it. Had to get a little underhanded in round two. Let's be honest, there was a blatant glove grab there, illegal use of the glove. Which he did use to sweep and get on top, could have changed the whole rhythm of the fight. I don't blame people. I think from now on, if everyone's going to point to the glove thing, like they talk about, you know, Khabib and Tiramisu or whatever bullcrap, that's fine. He grabbed the glove. He grabbed that. That is a fact. But I think we always talk about MMA. Unfortunately, and I love it because I think both guys are really nice guys and really honorable. I think we kind of joke like, well, you know, if you cheat and you don't get caught, then so be it. Then that's the game. That's the way the business works. And in this case, it did serve Oliveira well. Did he need to do that to win the fight? I don't know. You know, he certainly did, and it did lead to him winning round two and then winning round three, as Mike said. Maybe, you know, breaking Poirier a little bit in round two. Though I did feel like, as Dean Thomas pointed out, that Poirier did kind of know what he was doing, that he unfortunately probably took more damage than he wanted to, but was content with like, okay, I don't want to give him any sort of situation where he can put me in a more dangerous position, so I'm going to keep him in a closed guard and just ride the round out. But it was for a long time.
It's 5 rounds.
And it was certainly, but it certainly wasn't comfortable for him.
You got 10-8, unfortunately. Yeah,
I didn't give him a 10-8 because I would have said, because then if you did, I think you'd give Poirier a 10-8 in the first round. I didn't see the scorecard,
Mike, right? Yeah. Two judges?
Least, 2 10-8s.
I disagree with 10-8, but two judges did give it 10-8.
Because he had him down for so long. Yeah, I think the first round, I guess they saw it as somewhat more back and forth, though I thought Poirier did as much damage in round one as Oliveira did in round two. But I get it. The optics of being on top for so long affects the score. But either way, you couldn't have gone wrong with either pick. I was very confident Oliveira, and frankly, I just couldn't get off the bandwagon because I'd been pushing it for so long. I think since even before he beat Chandler, I was like, this guy is my number one. I think he's going to beat Chandler. I think he becomes the UFC champion. And I hope this doesn't hurt the narrative of Dustin Poirier too much, that, oh, he needed to win the big one to be considered. He's still a top five lightweight. I think Oliveira maybe jumps over him now on most people's lists, talking all time. And who knows how high Oliveira can go if he has to defend, if he can string together some more defenses. Because he's going to have to do it against the likes of, like, Justin Gaethje. Probably Islam Makhachev or even Beneil Dariush would be a tough title defense if he beats Makhachev. So he has a chance to build his legacy now. But very happy to see him get the win. And silence a lot of doubters, a lot of people who did not have him as their consensus number one. So good for DeBronx and all of us DeBronx supporters.
I just have to
well said, AK.
Yeah, Sean.
I just have to say quickly, the way that this whole Poirier title, or not Poirier, but Oliveira title run has played out, and in particular these last two fights, it's almost too perfect in a way, right? Because obviously the narrative that followed this guy for a long time in his career, and we're so sick of hearing it, was, oh, he's a front runner, he doesn't have the heart. Even after, you know, he wins this weird UFC title fight where it didn't really feel like this was a true title fight, but he does come back in this fight against Michael Chandler and wins the round, wins the fight. Even then, you have people, his contemporaries, Justin Gaethje, all these guys saying, oh, Charles Oliveira doesn't have a heart. He wilts when the adversity comes. He can't overcome the trouble. And then he does it again tonight, where he spends the whole first round just getting eaten hammers from Dustin Poirier over and over and over, knockdowns. It just comes out and dominates the next two rounds. I am so sick and tired of this narrative, and at this point, it was already beyond lazy before UFC 269, but at this point, I never want to hear anybody talk about this and repeat this same tired line ever again. Charles Oliveira is the furthest thing from a front runner. The way that this run has gone is one of the most inspirational things, frankly, we've ever seen. His career was a side note in this lightweight division for a long time. He was this guy who couldn't make weight. He has these cool submission stats, but he's never going to accomplish anything, and now he's someone who just continually keeps overcoming this adversity over and over again and welcomes it, and it's just incredible to watch, man. And I don't want to hear anybody ever again doubt this man's heart, doubt this man's will and desire to continue doing things like that. It's just incredible, man. It's one of the more incredible things we've seen.
What's the difference between Oliveira and Nunes, though? Because that's what Nunes, to me, her big thing was before she became this run, this long run, she was a front runner that eventually just wilted. Could Charles Oliveira turn into an Amanda?
So the difference is, right? The difference is Amanda Nunes just spent the last 6 years doing whatever she wanted, kind of, right?
Like,
she
was just winning.
Being in front the whole time for the most part. Like, she didn't have to deal with that. And at a certain point, when you're that person for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, at a certain point, like, I would imagine it's just easy to get tired of it, right? Or easy to get maybe a little complacent, easy to maybe take a day off on training here, that sort of thing. I'm not saying I know that she did that, but it's natural, inherent as a human being when you're on the top that long to get bored a little bit, to just kind of stop seeing certain people as, you know, these really difficult challengers, and I'm just going to walk through this girl just like I walked through all these other girls. Charles Oliveira is not there. He's not going to be there for a long time because he did have to overcome so much just to even get to this point. It's crazy to see.
Yeah. One of the questions, Sean, that we had heading into this fight was, who needed this one more? Was it Charles Oliveira to answer those questions and prove those doubters wrong? Or was it Dustin Poirier, who, by the way, I kept trying to, like, see if anyone could make an argument for Dustin Poirier, and even me, I thought it was closer than some of the other people thought it was. Everyone said it was a landslide for Charles Oliveira, but I thought it was actually a little bit closer because of what that title meant to Dustin Poirier. Like, he's got this mental mantle with all these awards and accolades and titles and interim titles, and we know how much the interim title meant to him. But him coming up short tonight, I don't think it hurts his legacy or the way people view him whatsoever, but in his own mind, how much is losing tonight going to bother him in the long run, do you think?
I would actually disagree with you a little bit. I think it does hurt his legacy a tiny bit, if I'm being honest. And that kind of hurts to say, because I like Dustin Poirier a lot. As a man, as a human being, as an athlete, he's incredible in a lot of ways, right? But I was one of the people who thought he was the number one lightweight in the world after Khabib retired. And I've been banging that drum ever since Khabib retired, and he was sort of that uncrowned champion, but we just saw tonight that probably wasn't true. And so was there ever a point in his life where he was that number one lightweight? It's hard to say, right? I think that hurts his legacy, and I think that probably, like you said, Mike, I think it's going to hurt him internally too when he thinks about it. He's going to have that question still, and he's not going to have that validation, because that validation is really what he's been searching for all of his career. Like, we've lived and died with this guy the whole way through, and he's an emotional guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and it hurts to see him like that, because we've seen him like that before. He said tonight, you know, I'm sick of crying in these press conferences in front of media guys, and it's just like, dude, I was there in Abu Dhabi when he lost to Khabib, and, you know, I've been there for other various press conferences where this sort of thing happens with Dustin, and it's tough to say. I mean, he's one of the greatest lightweights of all time. He's definitely on the short list, but he's gonna maybe go down as that guy who's one of the great fighters to never win a true undisputed title, and that, I think that hurts him more than anything.
Yeah, I think there's, like, when we talk about it, I definitely think there's a certain ding that the legacy takes, right? But just looking on social media and seeing how fans can be react and be fickle, we're not seeing a lot of Dustin Poirier hate. We're not seeing a lot of, oh, this guy sucked, he's a flash in the pan, oh, he just beat Connor. We're seeing a lot more praise for Charles Oliveira and what he was able to do because he defeated a guy of the stature of Dustin Poirier. So, yeah, certainly a ding in the rankings, certainly a ding to the legacy, but overall, the view of Dustin Poirier, at least right now, doesn't change a whole hell of a lot. It just almost enhances what Charles Oliveira did tonight, which is kind of the point I was trying to make. But great stuff. I mean, two really good fights, some really interesting storylines. Do you want to just go to the peeps, Casey? Because, I mean, I'm sure they're going to want to bring up some stuff that we're going to talk about. Let them control the narrative a little bit.
But peeps always so many fights.
So many peeps. So many peeps, though.
Let's go.
I want to say on the Poirier thing, though, I think that this one's going to bother the hell out of him.
I 100%.
Maybe not because of the loss in general, but the way that fight played out, I think he's going to watch the tape and just hate everything he did. And I picked Poirier. I thought Poirier was going to win. I thought he didn't look good walking to the cage. Like, I don't know, you know, body language, armchair psychologist or whatever. I thought Oliveira looked freaking dialed. Like, he was ready to go make a statement. I thought Poirier looked a little disengaged. And he won the first round clearly, but it was, to me, that first round, like, when Oliveira survived it, I would have bet a ton of money on Oliveira coming out of that. It was like John Jones, Daniel Cormier. Like, Cormier was putting the wood to him, you know, early, but Jones kept attacking the body and was clearly laying the foundation to win later. He was going to win the war if he lose the battle. And Poirier just, I don't think brawling necessarily was bad, but I thought every middle tactic he did was not strong. He got sucked into a fight he didn't want to or should have competed in. And it was full credit to Oliveira. Like, that was clearly what they dialed up. They planned it. They executed to perfection. He was landing those intercepting knees, those knees inside. That little short uppercut, he landed 100 times on Dustin Poirier in the clinch. I thought Oliveira, to your point, Mike, Oliveira looked sensational. Like, I hadn't had him as the number one dude. When we do our rankings, he's got it for me. Like, I thought he looked fan-friggin-tastic.
Yep.
Do you think
he knew his guy. He knew his guy to a T. He knew exactly what he was going to do.
And I thought, and if you had told me coming in that was his plan, I'd been like, that's insane, because he's going to have to eat a bunch of rockets from Dustin Poirier, and he's going to get melted. And honestly, like, that is objectively true, but he ate him and he didn't get melted. So, like, full credit to that dude. That's one bad man.
Look, this is two fights in a row where the Bronx could have been taken out in the first round. He was getting killed by Chandler. Killed in the first round. And Chandler, I think,
should have won that fight.
He kind of made more of a tactical error, yeah. I think. Then Poirier was perfect. Poirier knocked him down, kind of went for a little ground and pound, and then backed away when he jumped in
Oliveira's guard. I was like, no, and then he got out. Like, yeah,
and that was like 90 seconds to work in round one. Yeah. So I'm like, Poirier's got a plan. Like, this is going exactly as he wants to. If Oliveira, once he gets back up, I don't know if he's going to make it to the next round. But I mean, he did survive. Mm-hmm. Like I said, his striking and his defense overalls, even though I criticized his defense before, it's still better than it used to be. But still, I mean, you know, you're fighting Dustin Poirier. How good can it be? It's crazy. He doesn't have that air of invincibility of a Khabib, obviously. So I don't want to make those comparisons. But it really is impressive that he came back from adversity, because Michael Chandler could have been the UFC champion when they fought, and now Dustin Poirier. And you run this fight back 100 times. It goes, what, 50-50, 51-49, 55-45? Like, they're so well matched, and it just wasn't Poirier's night tonight. And Oliveira, again, has been on such a hot streak. He's got the hottest hand of the dice game I've seen in a long time, because
–
he fights a very risky style, and he's just been the man that's been coming out on top, which is a testament to his toughness and, like, how friggin' skilled he is. Holy crap.
Rolling them sevens, baby. The Conor McGregor strategy.
Every time,
success.
Yeah. Every time.
Even the backdoor little Joe.
Yeah, if they fought 100 times, I do agree. It's like 55-45. I don't know. It's super close. Like, I don't – this isn't one of those fights – dogs. This isn't one of those fights where you think, you know, Oliveira is going to win every single time. But hold on, let me
you continue. I got to get the dog.
All right.
But also that, that's sort of the state of the lightweight division right now, right? Like all of these guys feel so close to each other. Like obviously Chucky Olives is the guy right now. He's the man, but it feels like any of these top lightweights could win on any given night. And it's just really cool to see because we had this very long period of dominance there with Habib and then the Conor era before it was very weird because there was just the title was in limbo for so long. But now we're here and we're rolling and all of these lightweights again on any given night. The margin of victory and the margin of error with all of them is so narrow. It feels so cool to just be in this space right now in the cluster of guys we have at the top of this division. It feels like any given title fight could just be a switch of the reins, right? Like it's crazy to see. I can't remember a division where the parity was this close at a moment like this.
Who are you guys picking? Who are you guys picking? Gaethje Oliveira. Go on, let me hear it right now. Let me throw it to you first.
I'm probably picking Gaethje.
Oh, Sean. Oh, God.
I'm probably going to pick Gaethje again.
Gaethje for sure.
Gaethje.
Absolutely. I would have picked Gaethje to win against Poirier in a rematch. I think either he or Makhachev, I think, best lightweights on the planet. Oliveira deservedly is the number one guy. But if I'm just picking who's winning tomorrow, and that's actually the only thing I disagree with you, Sean, because, I mean, lightweight's the best division of the sport, so a ton of parity. But I think there's a really good chance Makhachev is just like 80% of Khabib, which is still better than everybody else by like a pretty clear margin in the division. So I think he's going to get the belt next year and he's probably going to have it for a hot minute.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that fight between him and Dariush because that's all we've been waiting for, right? Like we're all convinced that this guy very well could be the best 55er in the world, but he just doesn't have that top five win, and he's going to get his opportunity coming up in February. So,
the PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Really good fight. By the way, in case really you guys weren't aware, oh, go ahead, John.
Just really quickly, if you're Dustin Poirier right now, is your move to just hold out and sit and sort of wait on the sidelines until Conor McGregor is ready and then get that fourth bag?
That or just go for Nate. Just get that Nate fight right.
They're not going to give him Nate though. They're not going to. Why not? They wouldn't give Nate Dustin, I guess is a better way to say this, right? Like that feels like it feels like it's too big of a fight to let Nate have on his way out if he's really like on his way out.
There's a loss for Nate to have on his way out.
I'm just saying it feels like they're not trying to give Nate any favors on the way out, and that kind of would be a little bit of a favor of like, hey, here's a big name and it's sort of a big spot in his career. I just don't see that happening. Maybe I'm wrong. If that doesn't come up, it feels like Dustin waiting for Conor might be his best option right now.
I agree.
I think if Dustin wants it and calls for it, I think he'll get it. But if he sits and waits and just Diaz does his Twitter thing and just starts dropping tweets on Poirier, I don't think it does anything. But I think if Dustin Poirier in a couple weeks, he goes on Ariel's show and he just cuts a scathing promo on wanting to punch Nate Diaz in the face at 170 pounds, I think the UFC would give him that fight, but only in that sense. Go ahead, Casey.
Oh, it's like, I mean, the Dustin we saw tonight, I'm not 100% sure he beats Nate Diaz at 170. I know Jed was like, he's going to take a loss, but I don't know. I did think Dustin was the best lightweight coming into tonight. You know, there are holes. There are still holes with Dustin Poirier, unfortunately, especially, you know, I think a guy as durable as Nate Diaz and the grappling, I don't know. And he would be undersized. I'm just saying, that's why I kind of agree with Sean. I don't think that fight would happen.
Not by much.
I don't even know that it's Poles, though, right? It's just like that's Dustin's style. That's what why we love Dustin is he could win or lose any fight at any given moment just because he's so willing to engage and brawl with all of these guys. I totally agree.
Ready for questions?
We had a million bonuses tonight.
Oh, yeah.
A million while we pull up the questions. Pedro Munoz, Dominic Cruz, fight of the night. I think that's right. Six performance bonuses. Bruno Silva, Tai Tuivasa, Kai Kara France, Juliana Pena, of course, Sean O'Malley, Charles Oliveira, and poor Julian Robertson almost loses an eyeball and takes on someone who missed weight by like 14 pounds, gets a submission in the first round. And no bonus for her. I know placement.
And Andre Muniz, UFC hates submissions.
Andre Muniz gets another nasty armbar first round submission. No,
One-way traffic. And he doesn't get
Tony Kelly. Tony Kelly just breaks Randy Costa, puts him away in the second. No bonus.
This is why
two rounds.
That man drove all the way to Las Vegas with no mask on, in it, just so he didn't have to put on a mask. Give it. No, I'm kidding. But. This is why we either, obviously, ideally, you get rid of the whole bonus system and you just raise salaries. You know, you get win-loss system gone, bonuses gone, raise the salaries to the appropriate level. Or given auto, if you're going to keep the bonuses, 50 G's for every finish. Everyone who finishes gets 50 G's. If we're, because if you want to say, oh, well, you know, you want to make a distinction what the best performances were, they gave out six tonight. They gave out six. Clearly, them being special doesn't matter. Just say if you finish a fight, you get 50 G's or 100 G's if we have to keep the stupid bonus system. But
and you get 50 G's ahead, for surviving a fight against Ryan Hall.
So he should get
extra 50 G's.
They should take care of Derek Manner for the rest of his life because he's a changed man. I know he's a changed man and maybe the second greatest grappler of all time because he somehow went the distance with Ryan Hall. I'll have to watch that fight again multiple times to understand how. But I agree with Casey with what you said. Derek Manner deserves a lot of respect.
Yeah.
Plus, if we get rid of the bonus system, there will be two very big benefits. One, Charles Oliveira will have the most bonuses or whatever, however they've been couching that forever. Sure. So AK will be thrilled. And I would pay $100 a pay-per-view if they will just pay the fighters more so I don't hear every post-fight interview begging for cash like that they are impoverished people. Like it's the worst look ever and it genuinely hurts my viewing experience to know that every undercard fighter, even if their win was garbage, like, I hope that's good enough. 50 G's, Dana. God, just pay these people a fair wage for the love of all things.
I love they're fighting the highest level of their sport in the biggest pay-per-view in a sold-out arena, and they have roommates.
What was the first thing Tai Tuivasa said when he went into the media room? Before anyone even asked him a question. He picked up the microphone and said, 50 G's. 50 G's, I reckon. That was the first thing he said. And then when he was asked a question, what was his first answer? 50 G's! 50 G's again!
This man
I love that man.
This man drinks out of shoes. He needs more than $50,000 to turn his life around, okay? Give him, again, like I said, increase the bonuses or just pay him more money. This man needs help. I love Tai Tuivasa. Stop drinking out of shoes. All right?
Oh, no way. He's living the gimmick. Are you kidding me? That's his gimmick. It's fantastic. Right after he won, we have different monitors here in the media room, so we can kind of see things when it's on commercial. Right after he won, there were just lines of fans in the stands taking their shoes off faster than I've ever seen people take their shoes off and holding their shoes and their beers in their hands aloft, just waiting for the chance at Ty doing a shoey out of their shoe. That guy has the best gimmick going in the UFC right now. I absolutely love it. I asked him earlier in the media availability, why'd you pick Barbie Girl as your walkout song? What was the inspiration for that? And he had a one-line answer of, I'm a Barbie Girl. That's fantastic, man. Look, this dude is so spectacular in every thought possible way. Four straight wins now after a three-fight losing streak. I'm so happy he's still in our lives and doing this on a big stage like this. Like, you can't – that's true heavyweight MMA right there. When you have a guy doing that, doing shoeys on the cage and doing shoeys at the crowd, he got into, like, an altercation with a security guard here in the arena because they were trying to, like, usher him out and push him out of the arena and, like, hey, you can't be doing this with these fans. And he got, like, legitimately – Like, he was, like, real upset about it back here when we brought him back. It was, I love that man. I love him so much.
He should have
people
been on the main card.
People come to see me to knock people out and do shoeies. That was his answer, and it was brilliant. He just, everything comes out of his mouth. I'm just fascinated by it. Go ahead, AK.
He should have been on the main card. Him and Sakai, instead of the Neil Ponzinibbio fight, that should have been on the main card. With respect to Neil and Ponzinibbio, I guess they're considered higher ranked than Tuivasa and Sakai.
Greg Hardy is on the main card.
I didn't want to say it, but if you're going to keep putting Greg Hardy on main cards, he's on the opening.
Tuivasa isn't on the main card.
What are we doing?
Greg Hardy.
Tuivasa is a star. Tuivasa is a star. Like, this is absurd. You should be putting on pay-per-view. I know a lot of these fighters like, oh, I'm happy to be on ESPN, ESPN Plus, whatever. But there is still a distinction between being on free or, I guess, subscription television and being on pay-per-view. And Tai Tuivasa should be on pay-per-view. His walkout was not played up. I don't know if you guys got it in the U.S. I didn't get it in Canada.
Nope.
Yeah, okay, so we didn't get it up here. And I had to read that he came out to Barbie Girl. I did not get to hear it or see his Barbie Girl energy. Huge mistake, UFC. Huge
Shaheen,
mistake.
Can you show us the energy right now?
What's that?
Hi, Jose. Can you give us that Barbie Girl energy?
There's the energy.
Is that the Barbie Girl?
It was just fantastic. But really quickly, so we're getting kicked out of here at the media room in seconds. But I do want to just talk about something. The symmetry tonight of what happened with Cody Garbrandt and what happened with Dominic Cruz, to me, is just almost so poetic. And it's so strange now, this place that we've reached with Cody Garbrandt, because I think he's gonna be the saga of Cody Garbrandt is gonna be one of the more like difficult things to explain to the next generation, it's looking like, because we've reached a point with this guy where that win over Dominic Cruz, which in my mind remains one of the most brilliant performances we have ever seen from a title challenger in UFC history, that is becoming now a footnote to a career that feels like it peaked at like age 25. Like, this is really crazy at this point. I can't think of many comparisons for a precipitous drop to this degree. I mean, this is a guy who's now lost 4, 5 of his last 6. He's been knocked down 7 times over that stretch. And I mean, tonight, this was a bad one, man. Like, he came in here with his brain dehydrated worse than it's ever been before to make this cut to 125. And I think he got knocked down like 3 more times, adding to that total. Like, that's not the stat you want to see from a guy who's 30 years old, man. And obviously, in retrospect, maybe someone who's historically struggled with durability issues coming down to this weight, you should have seen this coming. But it's just a sad outcome in my mind, for a guy that obviously you don't want to write anybody off this early in their career. But at one point, we were looking at this guy like a future legend. And now I genuinely like don't even know really what to do with Cody Garbrandt. Like, did you try to let him keep going at 125? Do you make him go back up to 135? The Dominic Cruz rematch is suddenly kind of like interesting to me. Like, Casey, you threw that out. And to me, that fight kind of actually makes a lot of sense. I don't know. It's just so bizarre, this place we've reached with Cody. I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. I thought after that Cruz fight that this is going to be a future Hall of Famer. And it's just, it has not played out that way.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. What a 30 for 30 that's going to be someday. The no love story.
I was thinking about it after this fight. He's Johnny Hendricks. Like, this is the exact same career. Johnny Hendricks had maybe more wins before he got the title, but he lost it and then just was done. And I can't figure out the common thread that has made both of them be awful, but that is, super weird. Going to be really weird to look back on Cody Garbrandt and think he was a UFC champion in like 15 years.
Do you have to go, Sean?
Yeah, I do have to go, but appreciate you guys and keep killing it. Love everybody.
Love you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Love you, Sheen.
There he is. Live from Las Vegas, Mr. Sean Al-Shadi jumping on in.
Let's give Garbrandt, I still say give him one more shot at 125. I know that seems like a terrible idea to a lot of people. I just think, I honestly don't think the cut was as bad for him as people think. I don't think it made his chin any worse. I know, like, how could it not? But I think it's bad at 135 or 125, but he seemed to be okay with making the weight cut. Honestly, he didn't look worse to me in this fight than he has in some of his recent fights at 135.
Big shots, yeah. I really don't think it's a chin. He just gets hit hard. I don't think it's a chin.
Yeah, it's a defensive issue. It's a tactical issue.
I agree that I don't think the chin, but like, literally the thing that his career was made on was he's a good wrestler because he didn't get taken down at 135. And it's super fast hands. And he doesn't have those at 125. He's just middle of the road, I would ballpark. But I thought Kai Kara-France looked faster than him. Mm-hmm. And there were some tactical things that maybe played a role. But, like, I think he's way better served at 135 has a marked speed advantage. And yeah. It's not like he didn't lose at bantamweight because he was physically overpowered. Mm-hmm. He needs to take every advantage he can get in the fight at this point, because let's be honest, he's not tactically great. Like, he's just not. And that's
– yeah.
So he needs that speed edge big time.
Here's the thing that's getting lost in this, though, is that Kai Kara-France is really good. Yeah, like, he's really good. I was saying this when this matchup was made. I was saying this in the preview shows we did. I was like, I don't want this to become like, if something, you know, bad happens to Cody, that it's like, oh, he just sucks now. It's like, Kai Kara-France is really, really, really good. So if he looks slow compared to like Kai Kara-France, it's like, that has more to do with Kai Kara-France than Cody. That doesn't matter what weight class Cody fights at. I mean, I think, like I said, I don't want to say this was the wrong opponent for him, because I get it. They wanted to give him a top 10 guy so he could win and they could shoot him right into a title shot. But that was so misguided. And Mike, you kind of joked about it. Like, if he'd been thrown in there, I think it was you said, if he had been thrown in there with Figueiredo last year, Figueiredo would have murdered him. Terrible.
Oh, yeah. Murdered tonight.
Right. And he would have got murdered tonight. So like, I do feel like there is like fights he can have at 125. And I get it. He's one of those guys who's become a victim of his own success. He's a former UFC champion. Yeah. He was still ranked at bantamweight when he moved down to flyweight. So it's like, well, how can you move him, like, give him guys outside the top 15? But I wouldn't mind seeing him fighting, like, I mean, there's a lot of good – flyweight is so good because it's a smaller division, so everyone there is, like, close to elite. I don't know, like a Bruno Silva, the flyweight version. I don't know, Zaruk Adashev. I'm having to look at my rankings right now. I'm not just pulling these names out of my head here. Mark De La Rosa, if he's still around. I'm not sure he is. Francisco Figueiredo. Francisco Figueiredo. He couldn't fight Francisco Figueiredo. Like, I think there's fights for him. I get it, that are not appealing to him probably. Like, if he looks at these names, like – but if he wants to take a step back and be realistic, I do think that he can compete at 125. But I just think this fight was really bad against a great opponent. And we saw like the worst of him. And I know we've been seeing the worst of him for a while, but I'm not quite giving up on this weight class change yet. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Maybe Cody Garbrandt just isn't. What is wrong with Cody Garbrandt just not being a top 10 fighter? Maybe he's I know he doesn't fight like Clay Guida, but Clay Guida's fought like 2,000 fights in the UFC, and he's scratched being a top 10 fighter maybe once. I don't know. Maybe he's just a guy that's just good, and we just gotta get over the fact that he's not elite. He's just a good action fighter, and he just fights in the mid range cards. You know, or.
There's nothing wrong with that at all, Casey. The problem is the way that this has gone about. Like, I don't have any issues with the wins and losses for him. Cool. He has a ceiling. That's fine. I do have an issue when I forget who put up the stat. He's been dropped 7 times in his last 6 fights.
Michael Carroll. Michael Carroll.
Michael Carroll? Okay. No, he's been knocked out in 4 of his last 6 fights. Like, that's super, super bad.
I think we need to like change that.
I don't know if he never had a great chin or we got cracked, however what you want to call it. His chin is certainly not the best, and it's not getting better. And if I was hit part of his team, I would have a legitimate conversation about retiring. Not because he cannot compete against a number of people, but because anytime somebody gets dropped 7 times, that's you should at least have that conversation and be like, hey, there are other ways to make money that don't jeopardize your long-term health, because that's like a real thing, and I will now always be afraid of him getting got again anytime he goes in the cage.
Yeah, and it sucks. And the problem is, I understand we'd love to see Cody Garbrandt take a step back and fight the 45th ranked bantamweight or flyweight in the world. Unfortunately, when you are booked to fight for a title less than a year ago, and then if you won a split decision tonight, you are fighting for the title next year. You can't just fight somebody out of the rankings. Your name has value. You are a former champion. You present some sort of intrigue. When Cody Garbrandt is involved in a fight, people care about it. So putting him against Zaruk Adashev makes absolutely no sense. It makes literally no sense. There are no tune-up fights when you're Cody Garber right now.
Well, why can't there be?
Why can't there be?
Because this is not Candyland. This is not Candyland. It just isn't. I'd love to.
Greg Hardy gets 10,000 tune-up fights. This is Candyland if you're the right fighter.
Okay, when Greg Hardy's a world champion, when Greg Hardy becomes a world champion and starts getting title shots.
That's not a rule. It's just, I mean.
Casey, come on, dude. This is the UFC. You've been covering the sport for like over a decade now. This is how the UFC does business. This is how they've done business forever. When you're Cody Garbrandt.
Cody Garbrandt's not taking that fight. Cody Garbrandt clearly doesn't think there's anything wrong. Like, it's why he keeps fighting.
That's why about what has to change. Then it definitely starts with him. It definitely starts with him. Like, I mean, like I'm just saying it's not impossible. We've seen stranger things happen in MMA, and I think there is a path to him becoming a respectable, successful fighter again. But it's a long path. It's not the path that they've been trying to put him on now. Like, we're just a row of nonstop killers. So,
right. But there's it makes no sense to fight Zaruk Adashev, because if he loses to Zaruk Adashev, you're done.
Then you're done.
Done.
If he loses to anybody, he's done.
Isn't he done already?
There's zero reward beating Zaruk Adashev. Zero.
If he fights Manel Kopp and gets killed, he's done. If he fights Sean O'Malley and gets killed, he's done. If he gets killed, he's done. Can we at least give him a fight where we think he'd be favored? Can we give him a fight where he think he'd be favored? Is that not like, can we not do that?
He just had a fight where he was favored. He just had a fight where he was favored tonight.
And he shouldn't have been. And he shouldn't have been. That was a mistake.
That was an undersell, Kai.
I don't know how many of us picked Cody. I picked him
to win by first round knockout just because I had questions about Kai Kara-France's chin just as much as I had questions about Cody Garbrandt's chin. And if Cody was going to win, he was going to do it in the first round. And plus, I knew everybody else was going to pick Kai Kara-France. So it was worth the flyer to pick Cody Garbrandt to win in the first round, that he would actually like throw punches and stuff, but he didn't. And that's what happened. So, but sorry, it's just not the way the UFC does business.
Chris Weidman, I agree with that, but to say it doesn't make sense. To say it doesn't make sense isn't true.
Chris Weidman just got his leg broken by Uriah Hall. Sure. They're not going to give him a tune-up fight. He's going to end up fighting freaking Andre Muniz sometime next year. God, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. I'm sorry. It sucks. I'd love to see Chris Weidman fight a guy who just got a contract on the Contender Series, but it's just not going to happen.
It's the way it is. I really like the Garbrandt-Cruz rematch. I don't know if Cruz would take it.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
But Casey, I like that. I think that's pretty fascinating, because the more I think back on that fight, I'm starting to think that the reason Garbrandt was able to win is because Dominick Cruz doesn't hit all that hard.
He's not a hard hitter.
Yeah. He doesn't hit all that hard. So like it was fine, and that's still the same. So he might actually still be able to win that, because I also think Dom's pretty faded.
Yeah,
even after tonight.
But the Dom disrespect.
He had to sneak in the Dom disrespect.
Yeah, Dom did.
I told you Dom was going to win that fight. I told you.
I called him too.
All right. Question.
All right, let's go to the people. You're all driving me nuts.
I'm with you. I'm with you on the. I thought Cruz still was there.
Did Dominic get gifted a win? I had it a draw. I had round one, Pedro. 10-9. Dom took round two and round three, 10-9 each.
Round three, 10-9 each. What?
I like this score.
That's not a draw.
How did you score to draw?
Remember,
the first round was a 10-8?
Yeah, that's what he's trying to say.
He clearly says 10-9 here.
No, yeah, no. He means 10-8. He means 10-8 for the
round. No, the first round was not a 10-8. It was not.
He got dropped twice, but
I actually would have scored it a 10-8 if we were doing a live blog on it.
I didn't think it was a 10-8. Remember, Dom actually finished really strong that round.
He did. Dom won every second of that fight until he got dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You need the 3 Ds. And
it wasn't a gift. But Pedro did really well.
That was fight of the night.
Great fight.
Yeah.
I love watching it.
And did anyone see that? Did anyone coming into this card think that was going to be fight of the night?
No.
No,
not really.
Yeah, we all thought, Pedro's going to chop his legs up, and that's going to be the fight, and that's not what happened.
He didn't do that at all.
Cruz, I don't know about that. I picked Cruz. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, so did the fight kind of go how you thought it was going to go? AK?
I didn't think he'd get knocked. I didn't think he'd get knocked down like that in the first round. I'll tell you that much. I thought it was over, man. I thought I thought he was about to get Keith Peterson's.
I'm glad I love Dom. I love Dom's pettiness, and I'm glad we got to throw some Keith Peterson shade in there. That was God bless Dom.
Yes, he had to. Even after getting punched in the head many, many times with Pedro Munhoz, he had the wherewithal to throw a little shot at no nonsense.
He did not get gifted a win. That was a clear win. Have you talked about Garbrandt yet? Where does it go now? Yes. We just talked about Garbrandt for 28 minutes.
No, I don't recall mentioning it.
Okay, AK wants to send him to the Contender Series. Casey wants to send him to Titan FC, but still get UFC money.
No, I just make him a mid-level guy. We're done talking about Cody Garbrandt. There were so many other things.
I want to send Cody Garbrandt to the farm. He's done.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/Vox. That's klaviyo.com/Vox.
Let's talk about this lady.
Yeah, sure.
Oh my God,
that's what people are saying.
I'm so glad I'm very glad that we get to address this now, because I think mm-hmm. a lot of this is being blown out of proportion, and I'll explain why in a moment. So, for those on the podcast feed, MMA Dog is asking, so guys, Kayla Harrison's next stop can only be Bellator now, right? Because Juliana Pena beat Amanda Nunes. I don't think that's the case. I'm going to explain my stance in a second, but a lot of people feel like there's a video that has surfaced. ESPN put it out there that after Juliana Pena won the title, Michael Chiesa, it was the beginning of an epic trip to the octagon, apparently, according to Dana White and some other people very close to Chiesa. But towards the end of this little clip that ESPN MMA puts out, you see Kayla Harrison with her back turned, screaming the F word over and over again. And Ali Abdelaziz is there like trying to calm her down. And a lot of people are just like, oh, Kayla's responding to all the money flying out the window, which maybe that's the case. Or maybe she's responding to a teammate who she's worked with for a long time that she has talked about helping her get ready for the PFL finals and for her PFL season, losing a fight. It could have been a combination of the two. But a lot of people are just like, oh, Kayla's pissed because the UFC must have offered her $10 million to fight Amanda Nunes, and I just don't think that's the case whatsoever. Am I wrong, AK? Am I wrong about this?
No, not at all. I mean, that number is definitely exorbitant.
Not 10 million, but a big
not 10 million.
You know what I'm trying to say.
A big chunk. It doesn't matter the number.
I didn't see the clip, so I can't speak to exactly like what or her she was reacting to or how she was reacting. I do think that she obviously would, if there is going to be a fight with Amanda, she was certainly hoping it would be, she wanted to be the first one to beat her since 2014. How can you not want to be that woman? You know, Amanda's been built up so much, and to see someone else who no one was even talking about as a contender like 6 months ago, to see someone else take that from you. No, Jed, you were talking about it for a week, so settle down, all right? You just got on the
Pena.
Since Wednesday, not a week.
Yeah.
Last Wednesday.
Okay, 10 days. That's solid. I'm sorry. I said a week. I apologize. At least 10 days, possibly 2 weeks, as far as I know. To have that taken away from you, I mean, that's got to hurt. I'm of the opinion, I still think it's a great fight to see, but for sure it loses a lot of its intrigue, because the whole point of it is this broad question of who can beat Amanda Nunes. And now we know it's Juliana Pena. Juliana Pena can beat Amanda Nunes. We just saw, and three other women who fought Amanda Nunes can beat her. So I guess now in the other sense, it would be for... for Kayla. Now, who can beat Kayla Harrison? But I think what MMA Dog is suggesting is, well, shouldn't we see if Cyborg is the person who can do that first before we maybe circle around to, you know, Amanda Nunes? Let's say, you know, Kayla Harrison does beat Cyborg. Then you go later and say, well, Amanda Nunes is still out there, and who knows who else, right?
Jed, your thoughts on Kayla Harrison and what this means for her?
I think you're dead on, Mike. The similar clip was surfaced with Misha Tate, like, losing her mind, celebrating. People are like, ooh, she's stoked that Nunes isn't the champion. No, yeah. She's worked with Pena for a long time and is stoked about that. You guys are really trying to make things more than they are. So I don't think that now Kayla goes to Bellator. I think that that was always the most obvious choice for her. Bellator has a much more established 145-pound women's division. I think that Scott Coker is much better to work with, and I think that there would be much more of an opportunity for her to sign a short-term deal to basically just go get the three fights or whatever that she wants over there, and then she can, you know, be a free agent in and sort of reassess. I think she can play this extremely cagely, and that is what she will do, and signing with the UFC will take a lot of autonomy away from her. I am also not entirely sold that this throws a bunch of money out the window. Totally get the argument, and that is probably correct. But to me, I think there's still some interest, like, in if Kayla goes to Bellator. I think all of us on this program would pick Amanda Nunes to win a rematch with Juliana Pena. Now that Pena got the you know, my win out of the way, I would probably not pick her in a rematch. And so I think that it is highly likely Nunes will get the title back. They'll do a trilogy probably. And then, you know, if Nunes wins two, it's kind of like Stipe versus DC. Everyone sort of forgets that DC bolted Stipe the first time they fought because he got the two. So this is a setback. But ultimately, if a year and a half down the line, Nunes has the belt again, Kayla has picked up some more like legit wins. Not that her PFL wins aren't legit, but she got bigger names on the resume. She's a Bellator champion or whatever. I think that fight is still huge, and I will have a lot more interest, frankly, in seeing a more vulnerable Amanda Nunes against Kayla Harrison. Like, I think that that is a much more sellable story. I'm ultimately, that still may not be as much as
the UFC is going to sell. This woman, she can be beaten. Let's see if she can be beaten again. That's the sellable angle for Nunes now.
I think that is a storyline that is compelling, is, hey, we have actually seen this woman lose before. And, you know, Kayla Harrison is this wunderkind or whatever. Like, let's see where this shakes out. And maybe that doesn't sell as much. But we also talked about it on the pre-fight show. Amanda Nunes really isn't selling a whole much anyway. So this is sold entirely on Kayla Harrison. And I think she's doing just fine.
Do you have a thought on this, Casey?
Oh, I've never seen someone scream the F word so loud unless they're losing a crap ton of money.
Wow. Let me say
that was like ripping your betting ticket up. Like, no.
Let me ask.
That wasn't like, oh, my training partner lost. No. No, it was like I lost a lot of money. The UFC had her. UFC put a free agent on camera. On camera.
And they've done this before. They've done it before.
With who?
Brock Lesnar, like 17 times. And Kayla Harrison's very smart.
And they wanted Brock Lesnar. Very shrewd.
And they want Kayla Harrison. And they didn't get Brock Lesnar the last three times.
And they wanted Kayla Harrison to fight Amanda Nunes, the GOAT. Not the woman that just lost to Julia Pena because she got tired.
But Kayla Harrison can still fight Valentina Shevchenko, the actual GOAT.
There you go. Now you're thinking big. You're thinking big, Jed. I like that.
I was waiting for that.
Listen,
I will make the argument that Kayla Harrison just being shown on camera tonight made her way more money than she had, like, even Friday. Because PFL saw it. Bellator saw it. They know she's there. Brock Lesnar style. WWE up their offers every time they saw Brock Lesnar at a UFC event. Bellator and PFL, their offers have significantly raised. So I don't think money is an issue whatsoever. Secondly, I think the UFC is third, maybe fourth on her to-do list right now. One, because the UFC shit all over her until like a week ago, just trashed her resume, trashed her everything about her. Amanda Nunes would murder her. All these different things that Dana White said. So I think Kayla just showing up there is very smart. Take the meetings, get shown on pay-per-view. It makes your value go up. Bellator is probably the best place for her. It's the best place for all parties involved, in my opinion. Bellator will treat her well. They will pay her a ton of money because they got it, and she will have legit competition. By the way, she's a mom now. PFL, go get that Millie. I think PFL is still number one. I think PFL is really? One. Bellator is a strong two, and the UFC is just like they're the bargaining chip.
PFL's a free $1 million. It is
yes,
1 year.
And she's probably making like six figures every fight, too. She's probably making like six figures every time she even competes.
And if she goes back, she gets to like Julia Budd's a good win. Like that is a good win yes. on her resume. PFL, you and I have said this for months that PFL's number one, Mike. And I think she goes back for one more run.
At least one more.
I disagree because Dana White is a businessman. And he isn't trying to make Kayla Harris money. Dana White's trying to make himself money. And he went to the director, goes, get Kayla Harris in that seat, tell my graphics guy, put Kayla Harrison, make a graphic with Kayla Harrison, and put her on our pay-per-view. That because they were intending to sign her. They were intending that big Nunes. They were intending to make that Nunes fight at 45, and everything went tonight.
I never thought that fight would happen anyways. I never saw it.
I think Kayla Harrison versus Juliana Pena is a big fight.
It could be.
At 45.
I do kind of want to see that, actually.
At 45. At 45. Julia Payne's going to the former flyweight is going to go up to 45.
I think the UFC gets her.
I think but it the would UFC be fun on the mic.
All right.
Yeah. I think – I don't think her – maybe her UFC offer drops slightly, but her overall offers from the other parties interested, nope, not at all. I don't think she lost a dime tonight.
She lost a bitter.
What else do we have?
Casey, do you see this question from Arthur? Okay. Oh, we can talk about this too from Sandy Pham.
Thoughts on Priscilla Cachuera? Former UFC fighter, round. Probably.
Mike, you felt so good about that as that fight was kicking off, too.
She was one second away from winning that fight.
One thumb away.
She's got to make it out of the first round, and
she's got to make it out of the first. Yep. She couldn't do it.
Okay, the thought. How about this? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Does that apply here?
I mean, how many times can you cheat before that narrative changes? Because she already missed weight. Now she's trying to gouge out eyes. Now we got two two attempts at cheating.
Well, no. Yeah. Did she get in trouble for gouging the eye?
Oh, listen. If she had won the fight, I would have given her credit. I would have given her credit for the same with Oliveira and vice versa. If Poirier had overcome Oliveira's dastardly tactics and just knocked him out, I would have been like, yeah, he got what he deserved. So it's the same way. If Cachoeira had somehow gotten away with trying to gouge out Jillian Robertson's eye with her thumb, I would have been like, that's effed up, but like good for her, she got the win. She's still in the UFC now. I think she lost and she deserves to be punished for her cheating not paying off, and I think she's out of here.
I think she was done by losing this fight.
It's Casey, tough to gouge somebody's eyes and still lose.
Well, she had back-to-back finishes, back-to-back finish wins. So admit the weight miss was not good, though, because that's not the first time she missed weight.
Yeah. She also has some assault allegations against her from an ex-girlfriend, which Guillermo Cruz has reported on. So they really should just wash their hands of Cachoeira at this point. I'm sorry to say, but
yes.
Casey, do you see this question from Arthur Agababian about Tough? Do you see that question?
Oh, tough. Okay. Of course, you see the tough question.
I just want to answer this one quickly. I had to go on.
The question he spammed 6,000 times.
Yes, yes. Okay. I'll read it out.
Nunes and Pena coaching?
No. Colby versus Dustin Ultimate Fighter, or Colby versus Jorge Ultimate Fighter, I guess coaching. Here's what I'll say. Neither. Stop putting great fighters on the Ultimate Fighter. Just book their fights. The Ultimate Fighter does nothing. No one will watch anyway. They don't change the show. It will not make the show more compelling. You know how I know this? I'm the only person who's watched every effing season of The Ultimate Fighter on the planet. I can tell you the problem with the show is not the coaches. You could put any I should add an asterisk. I think you should get coaches who are better made for TV and not active fighters. Get Chael Sonnen on there. Do like Iron Chef style. have a rotation of like six coaches who are good for television. Put Chael Sonnen on there, Matt Serra, Dan Lambert. Pay these guys to be regular coaches and have fun with the concept and have no risk of delaying fights. If you guys look at like the last like 12 or 13 Ultimate Fighters, which why would you? Again, I'm the only one who watches the stupid show still. So many of these fights ended up falling through. And I get it. That can happen anyway. But I think when you put like a 9-month gap between like the booking, the announcement of the coaching and the actual fights, you're playing with fire. Asking something bad to happen. So stop putting good fighters on the show. People aren't going to watch anyway. It'll create this very, very little, almost imperceptible rating spike. And all you're doing is like, oh, well, now instead of getting to see Colby and Jorge fight right away, we have to wait till fucking nine months. Don't do this, people. Don't do this.
What if we do the exact opposite of what AK is saying? And instead of taking two active fighters, we take four of them. And we have four teams, and it's sort of like an IFL hybrid, but then all of their fighters work through in some sort of a gauntlet fashion, and whoever ends up winning the team competitions, whoever are the top two team finishers, then those two coaches fight each other at the end of it, and the two teams losing coaches fight, so we can sit four people on ice for 6 months, but there will at least be some sort of stakes for the coaches in this television show. Does that do anything for you, AK?
No, you want multiple coaches? Let's bring back Fightmaster. Bellator Fightmaster, season two, 16 years after
underrated,
the first season.
Underrated show.
Listen, you're getting that with WFL in 2023.
I'm not confident that organization's getting off the ground.
We're not talking about that.
By the way, I'm on Team Jed with this, and the reason why, Jed, is because you're trying something new.
Do something cool.
You're trying something different.
There's like a lot of room.
This is
the
UFC. They do not do that.
Change up the Ultimate Fighter.
You're at least trying to do stuff. The whole thing, everything. If I see another basketball jersey on that show, I'm going to lose my shit. Like enough is enough.
From Spambot. Get DC to. I like that. They're not active fighters. They're both.
That's not a bad idea.
DC and Dom. Spambot. That's excellent. Yeah, Cormier and Cruz. Excellent.
Dom's a great coach.
Dominic Cruz fought an hour ago.
We retired. Not an active fighter. He just got fight of the night. You're like
not an active fighter.
Well, how quickly we move on.
But at the same time, Cruz is a fight guy. He's got to fight like once, maybe twice a year. So he's a two-a-year guy at best.
Let's talk about
tough can be cool guys.
Oh, like, we're still in tough. God dang it.
The Contender Series is the outlet for like new talent to come into the organization. Let tough be your innovation space. Like tough can be R&D. You can try different rule sets in tough. You can do anything you wanted in tough. And they just have no imagination.
Oh, no imagination. Basketball jerseys.
Gotta get the wheel.
Let's do different color basketball jerseys, Eric.
We can bring in the power bar, Mike. We can bring the damage bar to tough.
The wheel. We need the wheel.
I see some people asking about
on our fan Q&A, we talked about if Julia Pena wins, which she did, of course she was going to win because the Oracle said so.
Oracle.
Is it the biggest upset in UFC history? How does it, and we kind of, pop culture, we felt like it wouldn't cross over if she did win. So like, how did it feel compared to Ronda versus Holly?
It's so different. It's just so different because Ronda is so much more famous than Amanda Nunes.
Amanda Nunes. Nunes. The goat. Huh? You know, she was.
Everyone in the MMA space, we call it that. Ask any average person if they know who Amanda Nunes is, if she's the goat of anything. Your average person does not know who Amanda Nunes compared to Ronda Rousey at the time. Ronda Rousey was ubiquitous. Her level of celebrity was, again, before McGregor, was higher than any MMA fighter we'd ever seen. So it doesn't compare in that sense. But I think we sort of said on the pre-shows, for those in the know, the home win was far more likely than the Pena win, unless you're Jed Meshew, of course, at which point it was very obvious.
Never in doubt. Never in doubt.
I think we can't forget the incredible violence that Holly Holm won that fight into. And just,
Holm,
Oh, and the way, like, how outmatched you could tell Rousey was.
The build to that knockout was just incredible.
When Rousey was, like, hitting air and running into the fence, you could see the crowd. The crowd was like, what is again, filled with probably with a little more of a casual audience when you have a crowd that big. Like, the attendance was enormous, right?
Yeah, it was like
there was a what the hell is going on vibe to it. The highlights to this day, you watched and you're like, oh, wow. Like, they don't look like they're even near the same class and home, you know, then delivers to the head kick heard around the world.
Also, Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey is one of the three funniest moments in MMA history. The Mike Goldberg takes a lot of energy being a rock star is...
Thank you.
That's a great line.
It might be my favorite quote in the history of this. It takes a lot of energy getting your ass kicked, Mike. Yes. I don't know that we're ever topping that line. And that counts for a lot.
So good. So good.
Like, if Cormier had said something real dumb about Amanda Nunes, then it maybe, but that line is just one of the best. Miss you, Goldie. What a legend. Yeah.
Maybe DC was all like, oh, Nunes is trying to tire out Pena now.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, listen, all of us in the MMA space, if you were there, it's a different moment. But just like watching it in a funnel, I think the moments are, this is probably way more of an unlikely result. But it's just like Casey said, it's just not going to cross over. Like the Ronda loss, like you turn on your local news, like your local everywhere. News, no matter how big or small your town is. If your town had 175 people, they were talking about that. They were talking about Holly Holm knocking out Ronda Rousey.
It is a mom test. I got so many text messages after that happened. I'm not going to wake up to anything tomorrow about like, holy, that happened.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Very true.
Same. Not one. Not
and keep
one
in mind, we move in social circles that are at least most like vaguely familiar with MMA just by being associated with us. And the Amanda Nunes thing will not register at all.
Yeah, that's why
I'll get more texts next week than I got this week.
Yeah,
because of the Jake Paul fight.
Yeah, I was. But even tonight's title fight,
I thought it was Derek Lewis.
No, it won't be anything about Derek Lewis.
I have friends who like Derek Lewis.
Oh, I love Derek.
My balls is hot, man.
I love that. Derek's must-see TV. But none of my friends are going to be asking me about Derek Lewis and Chris Daukaus. They're going to be asking me about stupid Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley fighting again. But
I was honestly more shocked at how Oliveira won than how Pena won. Not that Pena won in the way that I thought she was – if she won, she was going to win. The way Oliveira did it, I just didn't think – I think he had it in him to do that, and he does, obviously. And so that I had a bigger emotional response actually watching Oliveira win. So I don't know, it's just so different. It's just a different feel. It's really interesting. Ooh, let's talk about friend of the show,
Tristan Gaudet. Has this always been an issue with Randy Costa in regards of his cardio? It's the second straight fight where he's gotten tired. You just gotta listen to me.
You're talking about this, Mike.
I literally said exactly that. And it wasn't even a cardio thing. It was a cardio thing tonight, I think. I think the cardio played a factor, certainly. But I think Tony Kelly also did his homework and did it very well. Randy is just a fun fighter. He wants to go in there and just dead dudes in a minute. And throughout his regional run, he did exactly that. Makes his UFC debut on short notice at 4-0. Almost deads Brandon Davis in the first round. But when he doesn't dead these dudes in the first round, it gets a little frustrating for him. And we see what happens after that. Brandon Davis finished him in the second round. Adrian Yanez finished him in the second round. And he got finished tonight in the second round. You can get Randy Costa out of that first round. It's a little daunting for him. Like, it's just like, wow, like I hit this dude pretty hard and he didn't go down and I didn't finish the fight. Like, what the hell, man? Like, I think it's more... Cardio definitely played a factor in tonight, mostly because Tony Kelly was so offensive in that first round. It was ugly. It was not a technical masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. Those are the kind of fights that you beat Randy Costa in. Like, you just got to dog him. You got to dog him and get him tired. And you got to take the soul from him. And if you could take some punishment, you can take the soul from him. And I love Randy Costa. He's a great guy. He was on our preview show a week, 8 days ago, and did a tremendous job. Good dude. but that's just his issue. He's a fun fighter, but if you get him out of the first round, you can beat him. And Tony Kelly did a great job tonight.
One more question before we go.
Where does Valentina fit into all of this? Jed, go. Chevy truck driver. Man.
The Pena win was so great, not only because I called it, but because of what it does for the other thing that I've been pushing long, long before anybody else. And it's that Valentina Shevchenko is the best fighter I've ever seen in comparison to her peers. I have her ranked as my number one female fighter, pound for pound. I have, I think, since we started doing the rankings. And she definitely will get that spot on all of our rankings at the end of this month, deservedly so. It's just the best. Valentina, I know Pena said that she wants to run it back with Valentina. Good for her. It's what you should say as a champion. It's an awful idea. Valentina's going to beat that ass. So you should – I mean, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. I think Nunes is going to do the same thing. But you got the belt and you earned it, so enjoy it, Juliana. But you don't want those problems from Valentina Shevchenko. But, yeah, she fits into this by being the best female fighter in the world, and you should cherish her the same way you should have cherished Amanda Nunes because, again – no disrespect to Amanda Nunes at all. It's incredibly difficult to defend a title for 6 years. She defended belts, maybe not the same one, but 6 years. That's the type of stuff that literally only the best fighters who have ever competed in this sport have done. She is in rarefied air, and full kudos to her. She probably will get the belt back. But the bullet train, baby, the Chevy truck, she's the top lady now, and she's going to hang on to that as long as she wants it.
Yeah, and I saw Sandy Pham asking earlier, where is Juliana Pena now going to land in the pound for pound? So this is interesting. Like you said, I do think we're all going to put Shevchenko number one. I think that's pretty reasonable. Nunez, it's weird. Like, this is one of those situations where I don't think Pena necessarily takes Nunez's spot, right? Is that fair to say? Like, she doesn't automatically beat her and take her spot in the pound for pound rankings, right?
She's going to take her in mine.
And that's fine. She beat her. But pound for pound, I always think also is normally has to have a wider, like, you know, we look at it as like body of work, right? Sure. That's generally, again, it's so open to interpretation. So it's funny. I don't know how far Nunez will drop, and I don't know how high Pena can go. So just look at our consensus. Nunez number one right now, Shevchenko number two, Namajunas and Cyborg tied for third, and Zhang Weili at number five. So Nunez will drop out of number one. Do you drop her below Namajunas and Cyborg as well? But she beat Cyborg. You can't drop below Cyborg.
Drop her below Namajunas and Cyborg. I'll have to grapple with it just because.
Right, it's tough. And then Pena, does she jump above? She's just number two. Just number two.
Yep. No, probably three. That's tough. I'll put her behind Rose.
You put her behind Rose. Okay, Rose will be your new number two. Okay, right. We'll see when we actually start. I haven't thought about it fully.
I get what you're saying, and I don't necessarily
it's tough, right?
have to do it just because if you're looking at body of work. But I think it's really tough because the body of work that Juliana Pena just straight up beat that ass. Mm-hmm. And that counts for a whole lot.
Casey?
I think pound for pound rankings are stupid.
Yes, we can all agree. Yeah.
I don't understand how they. I actually have no idea how they work.
They're dumb.
Yeah. Dumb. One thing we need to talk about is real quick before we get off. Anything you want to talk about? Andre Muniz or Aaron Blanchfield? Two, I thought great.
Muniz is a real problem, and man, it's reminding me a little bit of when Damian Maia was kind of wrecking people. Very different guys, but I'm saying Damian Maia was wrecking people at middleweight, and everyone's like, "Oh, is he the guy to beat Anderson Silva?" Like, you know, Anderson Silva, like he's got good jiu-jitsu, but if he fought Maia and Maia got him to the ground, and we did eventually see that fight with Maia as a short notice replacement, so even then there was a little bit of doubt, but it was a very, very horrible fight, and no one ever wanted to see that again. So, but I wonder if Muniz is now kind of the same way. Is he the new kind of Damian Maia of 185?
He is 31. It's not like he's a prospect. He's kind of, we're seeing him as pretty much
a lot
of
experience. Yeah, he's like 20 something fights under his belt already. So it's like, is he the guy? Now people say, oh, well, can he, if he gets Israel Adesanya to the ground, is he gonna submit him? So it reminds me a little bit of the Maia Silva talk. Again, this is a long time ago. I know people would be like, what? Mm-hmm. That was a thing? Like, that actually was a thing once upon a time. And I think Muniz and Adesanya could be the same thing, but I don't know. I don't know how close he is. We'll see what happens with Adesanya and Whitaker, that rematch that was now officially announced today. We had reported it for the February pay-per-view. And then, but Muniz is right in there, 4-0 in the UFC, and just looks badass as hell. Maybe he just needs a ranked take out a top 10 guy or something, but he's not far away from a title shot at all.
Yeah.
That dude's fire. Aaron Blanchfield.
Oh.
I would be a lot more excited about her, and I still am. Like, she's freaking great. She is going to run into the Mighty Mouse problem really fast, where because Valentina's just already whipped the crap out of everybody else in the division, Blanchfield's new and exciting. She is probably like 2 wins away from a title fight, which will be way too early, and she's going to get clobbered. But that's the one benefit to being a long-reigning champion. If you can clean out a division, you get to pick off young prospects before they can really, really get the seasoning that they need. But otherwise, Aaron Blanchfield is probably going to be someone that's with us for the next 10 years of our lives.
What was the record for youngest champ in the UFC?
Technically it is John Jones. The true champion is Jose Aldo, cause he was the youngest champion back when the WEC was a subsidiary of the UFC, but they didn't fold them over because of tax purposes.
What age?
23 and some months.
23 and some months. I won't be surprised if the UFC tries just because they need to sell Shevchenko fights.
They might crash for that selling point.
I mean, that was the whole Macy Barber angle. She's gonna be the youngest champ ever. So obviously that didn't pan out. Maybe it's Aaron Blanchfield.
And she's a really high level grappler.
I hope they don't do that.
But, God no.
But they gotta make money. They gotta sell Shevchenko fights.
Yeah,
so no, you don't.
Two years away.
You don't need to sell Shevchenko fights. You don't need to sell Shevchenko fights because she's a co-main event. You don't need to sell her fights.
That's true.
Put her underneath somebody.
A two division champion when she kicks.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Juliana Pena.
Maybe there's no need to rush any of these girls.
She should go up, eh?
There's
she
never a need, but that's what the Pena, right? Hey, you talk about that's what the UFC does. They love rushing people, and that's what the UFC does. That's,
you don't need to.
They don't need to in this case. They need to give Cody Garbrandt an easy fight. They're not. They don't need to rush Aaron Blanchfield. They will. You know, that's we're talking about patterns that the UFC does. This is what they do.
Aaron Blanchfield will not fight for a UFC title until at least 2023. End of 2023.
So I think early 2023 is right in the wheelhouse.
Oh, I think
late 2023. Maybe. Two years. 18 months to 2 years.
Is that not rushing? Is 24 years old
now? No, that's not rushing. I mean, rushing would be throwing into a title fight this year, which the UFC has done things like that in the past. I think you need to sell
the word rushing and preparedness, right? Like it's not a rush technically because she has earned her way up, but she is not going to be at the peak of her powers by the time she's fighting Valentina Shevchenko for a title.
Of course not.
No, what you need to do is not just you don't even promote Aaron Blanchfield as her own entity. You promote this entire flyweight 2.0 class as like this next crop of killers. Her, Casey O'Neill, like Tyler Santos,
Miranda Maverick still.
Menol.
I definitely see some holes. I certainly see some holes in Miranda Maverick's game that I didn't see before. Miranda needs to find a home and she needs to stay there. Like, she can't keep bouncing around from gym to gym to gym to gym, getting different coaches. You could tell she felt uncomfortable. Even with the great Elliot Marshall in her corner, it just wasn't the same. She wasn't the same fighter. And she's doing a lot of exploration, and that's fine. That's fine. Now's the time to do that. But I need to see some consistency before I get excited for – I mean, I still think she's super talented. There's this high ceiling for her, but she needs to figure it out up here in terms of – Miranda Maverick, the fighter. She's Miranda Maverick, the student and the teacher assistant, and going for all these different degrees. She's got her stuff together. There's no doubt about it. But if she wants to be a world champion, that's a very important thing she's got to do.
It could take a while. I mean, when we saw Jim Miller submit Charles Oliveira, whatever years ago, no one was going, Charles Oliveira just needs to tune up a couple of things, and he'll be champion in a few years. He's like, it's just. These things take time.
Yeah, it's but Miranda Maverick's not going to fight that long. She's just not. She's going to fight till she's like 28 or 29 and be done. She doesn't need to.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
Exactly.
All right. So, guys, I threw up a poll about an hour ago. Who wins if Charles Oliveira fights Justin Gaethje? And it's Gaethje. And keep in mind, well, I know that you guys said that. Keep in mind Gaethje. a lot of recency bias right now. 75% Charles Oliveira.
Wow.
25%. Yeah. Yes.
75%.
We literally just saw Charles Oliveira fight and win in impressive fashion against Dustin Poirier. Well, I can see why. I'm also picking Oliveira
twice in the first round.
I know. Wait, that was
the first round. Did you see round two and
that
three?
That was the first round. Exactly. Those are more recent. But I'm with me. I'm with the Oliveira voters. I'm picking Oliveira. But I think if the fight gets made and we ask this question, 3 months from now, it's going to be a lot closer. It'll definitely be a lot closer.
Can't play the music?
I think.
No.
We can't play yet because we would be really bad at our jobs and our YouTube algorithm if we didn't talk about Sean O'Malley. And we haven't talked about Sean O'Malley.
We not mention him at all?
What is there to say? What's there to say?
He won a bonus. We said
people
that.
Really like Sean O'Malley, so we should talk about him.
Now we can put it in the description.
Yeah. I also haven't looked at the comments, but I would be shocked if nobody was like,
there actually isn't a lot. In the comments, there actually isn't a lot of O'Malley Paiva talk. I've been looking at the comments the whole time.
I haven't seen him either, yeah.
Really?
Because there's not a lot to say. He looked awesome. He beat a good fighter who, again, I think is really more of a flyweight than a bantamweight. Sure. Yeah, he looked great. Like we were saying before that Paiva was tough, and he smoked Paiva. So I think we got to give credit where credit's due. Does he need to fight higher ranked guys? I mean, maybe, but if he keeps putting on impressive performances on pay-per-view against, again, middle ranked bantamweights, I don't think he's going to complain. As long as his pay goes up on his next contract, he's not going to care. So he looked good. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. And it's sticking. He really created this narrative of the unranked champion, which some people seem to like. It was good. It was just a really good appearance for O'Malley, I think.
He is going to have a ranking on Tuesday, and his next fight is going to be against a ranked guy. Who do you think? Like, who do we think that should be? I think he's like a legitimately interesting prospect. I don't care about him at all as a person or like his stardom, but I think that he is a fascinating fighter to watch. And I have no idea if he can
get out of my shot, Esther.
But like, I don't know. Josh Emmett doesn't seem like a good match for him, but maybe it is.
As long as they're not in the same weight class. I mean, that's probably
why would he go to 45?
Right, sorry, terrible match for him.
Horrible matchmaking here.
My bad.
It's very late. It's very late.
I was not thinking Josh Emmett, the dude that Aldo trains with, who's also built like a fire hydrant.
Who trains with?
Murab Balashvili.
Oh God, no! No, keep him away.
Absolutely
here.
Not.
Get out of here.
Are you crazy?
I think Murab would never take that fight. He'll be insulted.
It's not worth it for him either right now.
Oh, he would take
it? Actually, Murab would absolutely take that fight. Are you crazy? Why would he not take that fight?
He would walk his way to a victory.
Yeah.
No one in the top five is going to fight Murab right now.
If he can't get a fight from anyone else, then I can see that. Yeah, you're right.
I still like the Yanez fight.
Rob Font, after beating Cody Garbrandt, felt that Sean O'Malley was a more interesting fight than Dominic Cruz.
Ooh, maybe that's Rob Font. Rob Font O'Malley. You think that would work?
Rob Font would definitely take it. Rob Font would 100% take that fight.
There's two answers to this question.
Ooh,
one, we're not doing Cody Garbrandt. We don't want to call.
That's
him
one of them.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, the other answer is going to have the same kind of argument because the other answer is Marlon Moraes. Those are the two best options.
I like that one. No, I like that one. Yeah.
That one.
I mean, you could do Frankie Edgar maybe.
Stop right there. I love Frankie. I don't need to see him get spin kicked into oblivion. No, I love Frankie. I don't need to see that.
Possibility?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's really it. I mean, you're not going to do Song Yidong. You're not going to put those two guys together right now. Because you have two like guys under 26, you're not going to have those two fight each other right now.
They had Maverick and Blanchard.
Yeah, in a division that's 23 fighters. In a division that's 23 fighters.
I think they absolutely would do Song Yidong or Adrian Yanez. I don't think there's out of the realm of possibility at all.
I mean, both
Yanez, maybe.
I think he's getting a ranked dude next. Like, he's going
to
be.
I think you have to. If you're going to rank him, he has to fight a ranked guy next. He has to.
He's going to get 14, I think.
Why is he getting ranked? Why is he getting ranked?
Well, Paiva was ranked like 15 like 2 weeks ago and then fell off or whatever.
At bantamweight?
Because he beat Phillips because Phillips beat Song. So it was kind of like that spot just kept getting taken. Like Song had it. 15. And then Phillips took it and then Paiva took it.
He's on a real ranking.
Cody Stamen's at 15 right now. He'll beat Sean O'Malley. He's
ranked 15 in the rankings. Like, O'Malley's getting in the rankings next week.
Not in ours. Well, the only ones that matter. MMAfighting.com/rankings.
Randy Costa. I don't care. I'm just throwing names out there.
Sure. I don't know. Like I said,
it's not going to be a ranked opponent. It's not going to be a ranked opponent.
Nothing would surprise me. Nothing would surprise me. New
contract, ain't going to be a ranked opponent. I'm going to play the music.
Dana White said we got to pay him. So yeah. I think they're going to pay him. I think they will pay him. We got to see what he's got.
Do we have any thoughts on Dana Ige?
On who? I thought Dana Ige won.
Janet's very late. It's very late, and I think Mike. I don't know, Mike. I think it's me. I think I have to work. It's Sunday morning, so it's very late.
What we're going? This is part one. Don't go anywhere. We're coming back for part two.
Nah, yeah, part two. Part two is called "On to the Next One."
Yes, we got to do Otto. Coming out Sunday. Although I think a lot of these are pretty obvious. But
I think so too. Yeah, this will be a good. This will be a good show.
This will be a good one.
Come on with my predictive powers so you can get right the next fights that will happen.
I think we're good.
I think we're okay. We got to share that oracleness for the listeners, and maybe myself and AK can get some odd no coins.
I'm so excited.
You got to prepare yourself. Yeah, you got to prepare yourself for BTL, Jed Meshu. So that's it. Yeah. Final pay per view in the books. What a pay per view calendar year it has been. For AK, for Casey, for Jed the Oracle, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Happy birthday, AK.
It's not my birthday.
Feliz cumpleaños.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.